So first, going to defer to the solicitor.
The Warwick City Council convened an executive session pursuant to Rhode Island General Laws 42-46-5A2 regarding the pending litigation of Fava v. City of Warwick, case number 119-CV-00582, and Broomfield v. City of Warwick, case number 124-CV-00444. There were four votes taken. All were unanimously approved, two of which were a motion to seal the minutes, and the other, another being the motion to reconvene. That is the report on the executive session.
All right, so we are back to the full council, and if Wes has any objection, I'd like to first handle the item up for unanimous consent, as we have a representative from the General Assembly and a colleague of his to help answer any questions or and explain the resolution before us. So is there any objection to addressing the item up for unanimous consent, specifically PCR 70-25, a resolution requesting the General Assembly to support H5634 and S114, the Defending Affordable Prescription Drug Cost Act? Seeing no objection to hearing the item and hearing it out of order, we can go ahead and, I'm being waved at.
Mr. President, on this matter, I'm going to be recusing out of an abundance of caution. I don't want my appearance or involvement to be an appearance of any conflict of interest. So with that, I'll be recusing from this matter.
All righty. And if you could just, hopefully that mic's on, if you can just introduce yourself for the record and then have at it as far as helping us understand what this item is.
Thank you, Council President, members of the Council. My name is Lisa Tommaso. I am the Senior Vice President at the Hospital Association of Rhode Island. I appreciate this opportunity to be before you and help you make a decision to support this very important piece of legislation that is before the Rhode Island General Assembly this legislative session. The Defending Affordable Prescription Drugs Cost Act relates to a program called 340B. That is a federal program that was established in the 1990s by the federal government in order to generate savings for hospitals and health centers that serve a disproportionate or high volume of uninsured and underinsured individuals in communities. In Rhode Island, we have four hospitals that qualify for these 340B savings. That would be Kent Hospital, right here in your community, Women and Infants, Landmark Medical Center, and Rhode Island Hospital, our state's only Trauma One, serving a high volume of uninsured and Medicaid-eligible individuals. Also, all of the health centers in Rhode Island are also participants in the saving program. The legislation puts a restriction on manufacturers from being able to siphon those savings off for their own benefit. About 5 years ago, manufacturers, actually in 2021, so about 4 years ago, as Rhode Island and the nation was facing a pandemic and the healthcare system was struggling to keep itself afloat, manufacturers changed their policies and procedures and put in place some restrictions on where these affordable drugs could be delivered, the pharmacies that they could be delivered to. This practice proliferated itself over the last 5 years and has really reached a breaking point, ciphering tens of millions of dollars out of the Rhode Island healthcare system. And this legislation will put a stop to that. This legislation has been tried in the courts and has been found has been upheld. And so we feel very confident that in passage of this legislation, Rhode Island health centers, as well as the four hospitals that I mentioned, will be able to recoup the savings that have been siphoned away from them and continue to be able to provide high quality medical services to our most vulnerable populations here in Rhode Island, and particularly in the Warwick area, given that Kent Hospital is so vital to this community. If you have any questions, I'm certainly happy to answer them for you.
Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for joining us this evening and making this presentation. my initial reaction to this was very favorable. It still remains optimistically favorable. However, in doing some research on this over the weekend, there were some things that came to my attention that are of concern, and I would need to hear how the General Assembly, per se, will deal with this. And one of the items I'm looking at right now, it says, by the numbers, 340B continues to climb in profits, dwindle with patient support. The 340B drug pricing program was designed to help vulnerable patients access medications they may not be able to afford. But this program has strayed from its original purpose. Large hospitals are using the 340B program to increase their profits with little evidence patients are benefiting. So this report just goes on, and there's several of them that I found with almost no effort. So speak to that. I need to hear something.
Certainly.
That will detract from this type of thing.
I'd be happy to. So I know that those claims have been made, and I certainly cannot speak for what has happened in other states. Like with all programs, there is always a bad actor somewhere. However, I can speak for the program as it exists in Rhode Island, and I can tell you that over the last 4 years, actually between 2022 and 2024, hospitals collectively lost $259 million. That's a negative operating margin of $259 million. So I use that because I say that to you, not because I want to shock you in the amount of money that has been lost by hospitals, but as a retort to the statement that hospitals in some way are actually benefiting monetarily and in a way that was not intended by the program. The savings that that are generated through this program are used in order to ensure that folks in Rhode Island who cannot afford to access drugs do have access to them. But not only the drugs, the savings are also used to ensure that patients have the opportunity to access treatment. The treatment that's provided to them free of charge at many of our hospitals. And the same is true in our health centers here in Rhode Island.
So, do you know of any protocols that are in place for accountability? So, XYZ mm-hmm. Hospital gets $30 million worth mm-hmm. of 340B medications, et cetera. Is there an accountability that would be required, whether it's a hospital or a medical facility or senior living, whatever, that says, okay, we bought 10,000 of these particular items for 30 cents a piece, and we're selling them for 35 cents a piece, as opposed to the full pricing. What is the mechanism that we have here in Rhode Island that is going to make us different from what I'm reading that's occurring in other states?
So that's a very good question, and I appreciate you asking it to me. It's very timely. So one of the mechanisms, the first stop mechanism, is the reporting that we do to the federal government. That reporting is done on a regular basis. But in addition to that, Rhode Island, in looking at the passage of this legislation, because we have been confronted with a number of accusations by the manufacturers and others that are involved, we are working very closely with the leadership in the General Assembly to establish a series of reporting requirements. Hospitals and health centers are 100% supportive of that level of transparency and accountability. We believe that it's important for you as a council person who wants to endorse something, but it's also important to the program. People need to be responsible with the funds that they have been allowed to access and use them appropriately. And so we have no problem with that level of transparency and look forward to the final version of this legislation as it's moving through the General Assembly this session.
And do you know if any, let's say, sidestep of these required accounting practices are discovered, if there are any legal penalties in place as yet.
So there are penalties that you would pay at the federal level when breaches are recognized or appear through an audit, yes.
And who would be the entity that would be doing this oversight and accountability? Who is the entity that would be doing that?
So I would want to be clear about oversight because there is a distinction between Rhode Island statute and federal law. And we want to be very careful that we are not enacting legislation that would support manufacturers' position that state law preempts the federal law would preempt any ability of the state to enact legislation prohibiting them from these actions. So we are working towards legislation that would provide reporting requirements by the entities to the state. The entity that would collect that information has not been finalized yet, but we are working closely to do that. I guess that's it. If we were not to file our reports appropriately, that rules and regulations would be established by the agency in charge that would create some type of a penalty. It would not carry the same level of, and that would be on whether or not we report, that would not carry the same level of penalty as if we had in some way breached the program itself. Breaching the program itself does have significant penalties at the federal level.
Are you aware of any any audit procedures that will be in place where at random XYZ hospital is going to receive an audit from whatever this entity is to ensure compliance with this?
So the federal government has the authority to audit. We are required to audit with the federal government, and the manufacturers have the ability to call for an audit at any time that they see fit.
But what about the state? Will the state have any, do they have any intent to set up a random audit inspection?
So we're going to be required to report to them on an annual basis. It's not a biannual or every so many years. So they will be looking at our records on an annual basis. The necessity for a surprise audit, I don't know what benefit necessarily that would be if we're providing them with this information that they've requested on an annualized basis. Okay. And it will also be public-facing information, so the public, yourself included, and even other state agency leads are free to look at that information and use it as they see fit.
And that information that would be provided, I assume, would consist of a complete accounting of any medications that were received by the entity versus what was dispersed or dispensed versus what the charges were for those particular medications, and that would kind of like be the balance sheet, right? Something like that.
Yeah, it would be about what you've taken in and what's gone out.
Okay.
I can't tell you exactly what the finalized list will be, but in working with leadership and others, it is a pretty exhaustive list that we will be that we think is important, we agree, is important for the integrity of the program to be maintained here in Rhode Island. Mm-hmm.
These things that we just discussed, is that something that will be promulgated into the proposed legislation or something that's done after the fact?
No, this what we are discussing now is something that will be coming forward in a substitute amendment.
Okay.
For the current piece of legislation so that the legislation passes as one full integrated package of both requirements for pharmaceutical manufacturers to prohibit them from imposing these contract pharmacy restrictions, as well as responsibility for covered entities, to report their information on drugs and costs.
Well, thank you for that information, and thank you for being so prepared. Thank you, Mr. President.
Do any, Councilman Napa.
I believe Councilman Gebhardt had a question. Defer. Thank you. Just a couple of points of clarity. When you speak to the hospital deficits that they run, that's contemplating after they expend millions and millions of dollars to their bonus structures, to their administrations, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And this program, my understanding is that the consumer, the patients, do not receive any direct benefit whereby they're not getting rebates on medications that they may receive or any refunds as far as copays or anything to that nature, correct?
I'm not sure that if I heard you correctly, the patients most certainly benefit from this program.
Monetarily benefit. My point is that the benefit that the patients and members of the public are receiving are buy-in through the hospital's ability to fund patient care programs with this money, right?
It is the benefit to the is yes, that there are programs that are available in the community, but it also provides individuals with discounted drugs.
Okay.
So they are getting the direct benefit of the some of the cost savings on prescriptions. Some individuals are eligible through these programs for free drugs.
Gotcha. Are there any community health centers that are involved in this program as well?
All of them in Rhode Island.
Every single one?
Every single one.
Okay. And then when you spoke, just my last question, when you spoke about Rhode Island Hospital being a participant, does that inclusive of the whole Brown Healthcare Group or just Rhode Island Hospital specifically?
Just Rhode Island Hospital.
So Miriam Newport are not included?
They are not.
Okay. That's all.
Councilman Gebhardt?
Ms. Tomaso, was it?
Yes.
Thank you very much for coming tonight and for the information. Super helpful. Good education for all of us. This is one of two items here tonight that are really statewide legislation that obviously get a lot of interest. I'm just not confident that this is the right venue to have this discussion. I think you're covering very important topics. And up at the State House, you have the benefit of having folks come and testify and hear both sides of the issue. Here, we only have the benefit of hearing from you, which is wonderful. But I don't think we have anywhere near the time or the information to make an educated and informed decision. So while I am grateful that you're here tonight, and this does sound like something that would be helpful, I personally won't be supporting this. I also won't be supporting the other statewide piece of legislation that we will hear tonight, because it is my opinion, which I hope I can get more of my colleagues on board with, that there are pressing matters before the City Council that directly impact the citizens and the residents of the city of Warwick. While I mean, there are many other things happening in the world, in the state, at the state level, at the federal level, at the international level. We certainly can't weigh into every single one of those. And so I think we need to be very cautious about the types of statewide issues that we weigh into. There are examples of several that I can think of where the state legislation directly impacts either our ability to govern in the city of Warwick, directly impacts the wallet of the residents of Warwick in a way that it doesn't impact, everyone else in the state in the same way. And so for me personally, I'm looking to draw a line for us of what we should weigh into and what we should not. And for me, as much as I appreciate everything that you've brought, and the information that you're presenting, I just don't feel that this is the appropriate place. So, thank you.
I appreciate your concern and completely understand it because there are so many issues that can come before you. I'm not sure exactly who brought this resolution to you for consideration, but I can tell you that the reason why most likely that it was brought to you is because this is legislation that's extremely important to the residents of the city of Warwick. Kent County Hospital is a 340B covered entity, and it is providing care and is providing jobs to thousands of individuals here locally. This particular piece of legislation is critical in order to maintain operations and to be able to continue the expansion of services that are being provided to the most vulnerable people in Kent County. So I think that's the lens for which this particular item was brought to you.
Yeah, and for clarity's sake, I docketed this on request of Representative David Bennett, who asked us to weigh in. And as we all know, we asked them to weigh in on lots of things. So courtesy where such is due. However, Councilman Gebhardt's point is both well taken and all the more poignant given another item on the docket tonight. I know at our next meeting, we're going to address this exact situation as far as if and when we weigh in to these sort of issues. And in all fairness to the two items for us tonight, this isn't the first time we've weighed in to state issues, but it's become apparent, both by, as Councilman Gebhardt pointed out, and just as is obvious to all of us, that we do need to somehow put on some guardrails to if and when we hear things, because otherwise it'll become difficult to do the normal business if we are constantly weighing into things that are outside our purview. And to have to constantly question what does affect us, what doesn't, becomes a frustrating situation, especially when to really know the answer to that, we almost have to be an expert on that topic. And we obviously are not. We handle mainly municipality items rather than items that affect the state as a whole. So Councilman Gebhardt's point is well taken. Councilman Muto?
Thank you. Thank you, Lisa, for attending. I appreciate all the information. Actually, you pretty much gave half my response, which was items like this, when we're working with our state reps and our state senators within Warwick, and they ask us to listen to some point of views, of course we're going to listen to them. Of course we're going to work with them, because it does have a direct impact on Warwick and Warwick residents. And this particular resolution is right in our backyard. Kent Hospital has been a great partner, a great community member. Probably half the people in this chamber were born there, and we'll probably die there. So that's another. In all seriousness, when it comes to picking the resolutions, I will always be supportive of when our state reps from Warwick and our state senators from Warwick ask us to listen and respond. So, Councilman Gebhardt's comments are also well taken too. We do have a lot of business on the calendars. Thank you.
Yeah, I never heard Councilman Gallucci directly weigh in on medical provider specific, but I know my ward is littered with medical providers. I mean that in a good way, despite the use of the word litter. So Councilman Muto's point is quite valid. Are there any other questions or comments from members of the council? All right, because this is before us on unanimous consent and rather than in committee, I have to ask, does anyone, members of the public, have any questions or comments on this item? And for those wondering, it's just like a committee, you're welcome to come up and speak on the particular topic before us. All right, seeing none, do we have a motion one way or another on this item? Motion for favorable action by Councilman Lattiser,
second
by Councilman Muto. Any further questions or comments? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Sinapi?
Yes.
Mr. DeLuise?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gebhardt?
No.
Mr. Kirby?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. Muto?
Yes.
Mr. Napa?
Yes.
Mr. Rex?
Recuse.
Seven yes, one no, one recusal. Motion passes.
All right, now we can go back to committees, and I believe we are at intergovernmental.
One,
Good evening. Time is now 7:28 and Intergovernmental comes to order. First up, we have acceptance of the minutes from the committee meeting held on May 5th. Is there any objection to approving the minutes from May 5th? Hearing none, minutes are approved.
I need to recuse. Yes.
Yep. Next up, we have appointments. These appointments have been before us previously, however, they were not properly noticed, and now they are. First up, from the Historical Cemeteries Commission, we have Mark Brown from Ward 6, and this is a reappointment. Do any members of the committee have any questions or comments on Mr. Brown's reappointment to the Cemeteries Commission? Seeing none, members of the council? Seeing none, members of the public? Members of the public? They don't need to appear for a reappointment. Okay. Do we have a motion?
Motion to move favorable action. Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Next up, to the same commission, the Historical Cemeteries Commission, Lisa Corkum of Ward 1. This is also a reappointment. Any members of the committee have any comments or questions? Seeing none, members of the council? Seeing none, members of the public? Seeing none.
Motion to move favorable action. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, next up, same commission, the Honorable Francis Flaherty, Ward 5. Any members of the committee? Comments, questions? Council? Seeing none, members of the public? Any comments on Honorable Francis Flaherty? Appointment to the cemetery, reappointment. Seeing none, do we have a motion?
Motion to move favorable action. Second.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, if I may, if I need to recuse on this appointment, should I do so now when it comes to the floor?
No, okay.
No, this is just the committee members.
Thank you.
You can do that at the full council meeting.
Do we vote?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 And finally, also from the Historical Cemeteries Commission, Alan Golder. Mr. Golder's from Ward 4. This is also a reappointment. Any members of the committee? Council? Public? Any members of the public? Seeing none?
Motion to move favorable action. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Four reappointments to the Historical Cemeteries Commission. And now we have one to the Historic District Commission. I believe this is a new appointment replacing Michael J. Carroll. This is for Arlene J. Chorney from Ward 4. Any members of the committee have any questions? Absolutely.
Well, no, Councilman DeLuise. I'd like to speak. I spoke with Arlene last week. And her resume is very impressive. She's a long time, she's been on a lot of different commissions, committees, but the resume, I think, I don't know if you gentlemen have seen it, but it's very impressive, and I think she would be a good fit for this position.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, we do have a number of historic districts in the the city, so the work that this group does is very important. Any other members of the committee? Members of the council? Seeing none, any members of the public? All right, seeing none.
Motion to move favorable action.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we are complete with appointments. We have one item further before us. I thought I heard something. PCR 5225, a resolution requesting the General Assembly to support constitutional rights to bear arms and oppose the Rhode Island assault weapons ban of 2025, H 5436 and S 359. This was introduced by Councilman Lattiser and also has co-sponsors of Council President Sinapi, Councilman Napa, Councilman Foley, Councilman Muto, Councilman Kirby, and Councilman DeLuise.
Mr. Chairman, if you will, I'd like to make a motion to move this to the full council floor so we can have one continuous discussion.
Not opposed?
Congruently.
I think we're there already, so. Okay, we have a motion to move this to the council floor.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 We have one more?
Mr. Chairman?
Oh, yeah.
For the members of the public that are here, could you just explain to them what that means,
move to the floor? My pleasure, Councilman.
Thank you.
So the committee here will conclude our business. We'll just head back to our seats, and we will hear this item as a full city council with public comment as well. So basically the same deal, but we can conclude the committees first. So last up is PCR 67-25, a resolution requesting the General Assembly amend RIGL 1785 to include the City of Warwick in the list of municipal councils authorized to approve the employment and compensation of local canvassing authorities. This one similarly is co-sponsored by Councilman Lattiser, Sinapi, Foley, Ricks, Napa, DeLuise, Muto, and Kirby. And I think the administration has a statement prepared on this.
Yes. Good evening, Bill Facenti, Mayor Precosi's Chief of Staff. Mayor Precosi is adamantly opposed to this amendment.
We're on to a different item, so thank you.
So again, Mayor Precosi is adamantly opposed to this piece of legislation. In Warwick, the Board of Canvassers is an entity tasked with overseeing elections, including voter registration, ballot processing, and certifying election results. Its integrity is essential to the public trust in the electoral process. Perceived politicization of the Board of Canvassers, allowing a political body like the City Council to control staffing and salaries, creates an appearance of partisan influence over election administration. Even if councilors act in good faith, the optics can erode public confidence in election fairness and neutrality. This is a threat to independent election oversight. Independent boards are a safeguard against undue influence from elected officials who may have a stake in the outcome of elections. Given the council, this power could lead to real or perceived conflicts of interest, such as hiring individuals with political loyalties or adjusting pay to reward or pressure staff. There's also a potential for abuse or retaliation. If the board were to make decisions that displeases council members, for example, rejecting ballot challenges or enforcing voter access laws strictly, they could retaliate via staff cuts or budget reductions. There's also an erosion of checks and balances. The structure of election oversight is deliberately designed to keep political influence at arm's length. Currently, we have a board of canvassers that is appointed by the council. Members are selected by the political committees. There can be no more than two of one particular party. They are appointed and confirmed by the council. You'd be taking away this rule and this power against from them. This resolution may disrupt the balance between elected officials and the nonpartisan bodies meant to keep them in check. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Facenti. I'll reserve my comments, actually. I'll let my colleagues go first. Do you have anything?
No.
Either of you?
Just to speak on intent of this resolution, by no means is the council trying to usurp the authority of the Board of Canvassers or the Electoral Committee, whomever at the state level appoints people to our Board of Canvassers. However, what the council is seeking to do is to join other communities who already have been empowered in this way to simply stop the state unilaterally being able to leverage budget funds that are allocated towards personnel that the city and the taxpayer ultimately have to pay for. The council, I myself and I believe my colleagues would, I believe my colleagues would agree that it's important that the city maintain control over levels of salaries that would be appropriate for our budget, for the revenue that we have, and to keep it commensurate with other members of the administration in performing similar duties. It stands illogical to me to allow a state agency to extend their reach and to be able to dictate strictly what a city has to pay someone. It just seems illogical. Their ability to do that now seems to usurp your authority as the administrative branch, or the executive branch, rather. And I know you disagree, and that's fine. But this just doesn't seem equitable to me to have the state dictate what the executive branch of our local government has to pay.
I have a question.
Yep.
You're referring to the state dictating, I think it's our local Board of Canvassers, which is made up of four Warwick residents appointed, two by the GOP and two by the Democratic Party.
Sorry.
in the city. So it is, I just want, I didn't want to go too far down that rabbit hole, because I don't think it's someone else coming in and exerting their authority on us so much as, you know, an independent appointed body, you know, whose goal is to abstract politics. Mm-hmm. You know, you can envision a scenario where, you know, the mayor, you know, is, you know, where there's an election, and certainly the mayor and the administration have the most authority with them sitting in the room with them, you know, to potentially play shenanigans with the electoral process. So that I think the idea here is that it's abstracted from that. I know this is a reaction to the budget. Mm-hmm. Where it was identified that there was a raise given to the director, which was authorized and approved by the board and does not require our authorization on that specific action. However, we do have authority both at the party level and at the council level to approve and appoint the members of that board, but there's meant to be some level of abstraction between, you know, that board and then the hire fire slash what do you get paid for that individual, you know, serving in that pretty critical role for our elections. So did you want to add anything?
Yeah, Councilman Knapper, there are three of the 39 cities and towns that do this.
Correct.
Cranston, Woonsocket, and Coventry.
It's not, but the number's not zero.
Correct, but it's not a majority.
Nobody said majority.
He didn't say the majority.
Right, I understand. So the mayor supports how the Board of Canvassers operates currently. This, as Councilman Gephardt mentioned, came out of the budget meetings. Some individuals on the council were upset at how the board voted in accordance with state law to give an employee, the clerk of the Board of Canvassers, a raise. The administration agreed with it. I mean, we feel, and the mayor will fight this in the General Assembly, he will testify against it. This is not something that he supports at all.
If you have anything else, or I can move on.
No, I appreciate your clarity on that. That was what I was getting. I was referencing, like, the state
the
general
law. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Councilman. Any members of the council? Councilman Ricks.
Thank you. I really just see this as a matter of checks and balances here. So the City Council, under this, resolution, this proposed change, we would not have the power to go and remove members of the Board of Canvassers.
Yes, you would.
Simply a matter of Board of Canvassers are subject to our ratification and approval, and we would have some control over the salaries, but we would not have the ability to remove members of the Board of Canvassers. It's the executive who, I'll allow the chief to speak as to that.
Councilman, as the state law reads currently, the Boards of Canvassers have the authority to appoint and employ all its necessary clerical and technical assistance and fix the compensation of each person appointed within the limits of funds available to its pursuant to law, provided that in the cities of Cranston, we're going to insert Warwick, and Woonsocket and the town of Coventry, the employment and compensation shall be subject to approval of the respective city and council. We currently have checks and balances with the Board of Canvassers. Those members are appointed and confirmed by the city council, representative of political parties. So this, as this is written, you would have the ability to remove employees. So you have the ability to appoint and employ. That is not just controlling their salaries.
Could we ask the solicitor to weigh in on that as a legal opinion? Would the council actually have the ability to remove someone from the Board of Canvassers under the legislation as proposed?
Chief, are you indicating that you believe that the board members are employees?
No. It says the appointment and employ of all its necessary clerical and technical assistance and fix the compensation of each person appointed within the limits of funds available to pursuant to the law. It's the employee.
Right. So the board will still operate independently without guidance from any political or other appointed person. This is seeking to give the flexibility, not mandating that they, it does mandate that it would be subject to the approval. So this is asking for the city of Warwick to be included as a few other noted municipalities, that they would have the authority to appoint and employ the personnel supporting the board. It's not dictating the board itself or their actions, but what came up in the budget meeting is that the authority to set compensation is limited by only by the availability of funds, and as we know, funds are transferable. And so any effort by the council to address this in such manner, we're not necessarily able to fulfill the intent that the council was trying to gain some authority over, some controls over. But this would allow for the council to have that authority to set the employment and its compensation of the staff, not the board members.
Correct. I wasn't talking about the board members. I was talking about the staff, that the council would have the authority to appoint and employ and set their salaries. And two of the members of the staff are union members covered by the collective bargaining agreement.
There was some discussion during the budget hearing with regard to the director that, you know, a workaround, I guess it was positioned as, could be to alter the budget to only make an allowed amount of money available to pay. That was thrown out, but is that even viable? I don't know. What's your opinion?
I'm not offering an opinion on that. That's, according to the administration, that's not viable. It's an administrative function, setting department budgets.
Okay. Any other members of the council have anything to...
So, Chief, I think you're making my point for me. You're saying that setting the compensation, as you and I have had this discussion in other arenas, setting compensation levels, it should be an administrative function. That's pretty much what you just stated.
Correct, but not the council.
We're not suggesting that we set the compensation, but by and through the budget that is presented by the administration, we would approve it. rather than having it force-fed by forces outside of the administration and the council's control relative to the budget only. Would it be more palatable, I suppose, if the council didn't have ability to effectuate or approve or disapprove the employment and just compensation? Because I can speak for myself, and I think some of my colleagues would agree that the issue here is the leverage over the compensation level, which has a direct effect on the budget, not so much the appointments, nor do we have any intention, or I don't have any intention, and I would hope my colleagues don't have any intention of leveraging the personnel that are chosen to function in those positions, but just simply to maintain control over the entire budget instead of losing control over one line item.
So as it's written, the council will have the authority to set the compensation. So as it's written, the administration is against it. The administration is in favor of keeping it the way it is, governed by the board in accordance with state law.
The way that I would interpret that is that we would only have the authority to approve, not set.
It says set. To fix, I'm sorry, fix the compensation. That's set.
Okay.
So again, the administration's against it, keeping it with the current state law that governs the authority.
Understood.
Any other members of the... Councilman Ricks.
How about this side of the room?
I'm not actually seeing that language of to fix or to set. I'm looking at the second page, paragraph 4, starting at line item, line 17.
It's the last word in the sentence, fix.
Appoint an employee, all that's necessary, clerical and technical assistance, and fix the compensation of each person appointed within the limits of the limits of funds available to it pursuant to law, provided that in the cities of Cranston, Warwick, and Woonsocket, and the town of Coventry, the employment and compensation shall be subject to the approval of the respective city or town councils. So I only see the word fix there. In the first clause of the sentence relating to the, it really goes back to subsection A, where the canvassing authority shall have and exercise those functions and powers. And then the second clause is the provided, however, the exception to it. And in that second clause, it's a matter of subject to the approval. So it's the way that it's phrased, unless Cranston, Warwick, and Coventry actually do things differently, my reading of this is that it comes to the Warwick City Council for approval, and then we effectively either approve, we make changes, or we don't. And it's not as if in the middle of the year we can go and start firing people or make changes in the middle of the year or anything of that nature. I'm not seeing that in this.
So as a point of information, can the solicitor weigh in as to whether the revised language, which is simply the insertion of the word Warwick into the fourth subpart, would grant the city council the ability to fix the employment and rate of compensation, or if it simply would allow us to approve the employment and rate of compensation?
Thank you, Mr. President. The canvassing authority has and will remain to have the authority to fix the compensation of each person. The language is giving essentially advice and consent for that decision. So if we don't agree with that, we can, the council can send that message back, and the canvassing authority will have to reconsider and come back to the table with something else. They're still fixing it, but it's subject to the approval of the council. Should this legislation pass, should this resolution to the assembly be approved, and then the legislature approve accordingly. but we are not taking the authority away. We are qualifying the authority of the canvassing authority with the advice and consent.
So, Solicitor, I am not an attorney, but when it says except in the cities of Cranston, Warwick, and Woonsocket, and a town of Coventry, it sounds like you are taking away the authority from the Board of Canvassers to hire and compensate and fix the compensation. That does not mention the advice and consent or the approval of the compensation is at the budget hearings. That's the council's chance to weigh in on the budget and the council, the Board of Canvassers salaries.
Thank you, Chief. Respectfully, the opening clause of number four, which begins on line 17, is a granting of authority to the canvassing authority. It is then qualified with the end language on lines 20 and 21, subject to the approval of the respective city or town councils. So we are not taking anything. It is merely providing a approval process of what the decision to do or not do, to hire or not fire, or hire or fire, or fund at a certain level those employment opportunities. So this is not taking something. It is merely giving an approval authority of the actions taken or not taken by the canvassing authority.
Would this then be the only employee in the city that we approve the hiring of, other than the judge?
I believe so.
This body does approve the appointment of the clerk.
And the clerk, okay.
There are a few.
I believe we also appoint our own constituent affairs liaison and council solicitor. I think that's a list of three, more or less.
Okay, fair enough. Councilman Lattiser, you get your first bite at the apple.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Chief, with all due respect, I disagree with a lot of the administration's position on this. As everyone here regarding the city council and yourself know, I'm the one that created the ruckus about that salary increase that we had no say of. I'd also point out that it's this body right here that approves the mayor's salary. So to think that it's not okay to approve the director of the Board of Canvassers' salary, but it is okay to approve the mayor's salary, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But the reason that pushed me over to go for this legislation is because of the significance of the increase of that salary. And that increase was higher than anyone else got for a raise. And we had no say in the matter. And if I understand correctly, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think the new level of salary that is in place now that we had no say in exceeds the salary of one of the directors that was employed in that position for years. And that is not fair. To increase that salary by the amount of monies that it was increased with no input from the body that's responsible for approving, setting the budget is wrong. For that type of an increase to be provided to one select employee, you talk about the issues of politics and whatever else. If there is someone in a position in the Board of Canvassers that is doing something that is not legal, it was suggested retaliation or whatever, I'm gonna put Lattiser with an opponent on his ballot that doesn't exist. That could become a criminal matter. I'm not looking to control the employment of people in the Board of Canvassers. I'm not looking to determine who they're going to hire or not hire. We already have the authority to approve or disapprove that appointment to that position. So we already have that. What I'm looking to do is to move that financial responsibility onto the body that's responsible for the finances, and that's us. We're responsible for the finances. And I called out many people, or let me rephrase, items on that budget that I just felt weren't correct. So this isn't about an individual person. This is about the governing body, which is us, having the authority on a salary increase for every employee of the city, including the director of the Board of Canvassers, including the mayor, including yourself, and a lot of other folks. So we're not looking to take control of the Board of Canvassers. We got enough things that we need to deal with. But what I am looking to do is that allow this city council, as three other communities in the state already do, which is approve of a salary line item or increase in that particular department. That's it. You want to seek an amendment on that, you know, we have nothing to do with. You want to bring in, you know, an extra dozen volunteers during an election? Fine, I'm okay with that. My issue is that raise was not appropriate given the financial conditions that this city is in right now. I object to it then, and I object to it now. And I think this is something that this city council absolutely needs to have the control of what happens. The way this is now, a board could come in and increase that salary 30 or 40% just because. And we'd have nothing to say about it. That is fiscally irresponsible. And this is what has prompted me to put forward this legislation. And I believe this is why I have so many co-sponsors to this legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilman. If there aren't other members of the council who'd like to add anything, I'll go to the public. Any members of the public want to weigh in on this? Seeing none.
Motion to move favorable action.
Second. Motion. Second. Okay, we've got a motion for favorable. We've got a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No. And that is all for us. Intergovernmental adjourns at 8 o'clock.
Next up is the Public Properties Land Use Community Affairs Committee.
May I ask for a point of clarification?
The City Council Committee on Public Properties, Land Use, and Community Affairs comes to order at 8:04. First up, we have acceptance of the minutes from May 5th, 2025. Do we have a motion? We have a motion favorable. Do we have a second? Second, Councilman Kirby. All in favor? Aye. Okay. First item on the agenda, I believe that the City Council solicitor has something to read into the record quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a clerical matter here. At the meeting last month, the City Council made an amendment and passed for first passage PCO 5-25 at sub A. The agenda here needs to be amended to reflect that we are here on second passage of the sub A. This is a clerical issue. It does not change the advertising of the abandonment of a portion of Harper Street.
Thank you. Will anyone move the amendment to add sub A following PCO 5-25 and before the word order?
So moved.
Councilman Foley moves. Do we have a second? We have a second. Councilman Kirby, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Here we are. PCO 5-25 sub A, order on the abandonment of a portion of Harper Street, John Harold, Barbara Harold, Karen Harold, Bruce Moore, Mary Moore, Nancy Stockard, and Jason Stockard, petitioners. This is for second passage. Councilman Kirby, do you recommend favorable action, second passage?
Yes, favorable action, move forward.
All right, and let's see. We have the recommendation. Do we have any further discussion, members of the committee? Any further discussion, members of the council? Any further discussion on this item, members of the public? Hearing none, do we have a motion?
Move favorable action.
Moved, Councilman Foley. Seconded, Councilman Kirby. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it, 4-0, second passage. Okay, second item on the agenda. We have PCR 61-25, a resolution in observance of Pride Month. So, June is Pride Month. We often recognize this here at the City Council, annual basis. I think it's important for all members of the community to be recognized, accepted, and for the Warwick City Council to make clear that this is a welcoming place and welcoming community to all people. Any further discussion, members of the committee? Further discussion, members of the council? Further discussion, questions, comments, members of the public? Hearing none, do we have a motion? And do we have a second? Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. 4-0. Okay. Third item on the agenda, PCR 62-25, a resolution in observance of Caribbean American Heritage Month. So, June, previously recognized by the U.S. State Department, was also recognized as Caribbean American Heritage Month for the very same reasons. I docketed this item and would request support. I would also add that while this might seem like something that may not affect Warwick, I think that many of us, if not all of us, know someone from the Dominican Republic or Cuba or Haiti or one of the many other countries in the Caribbean. And especially nowadays, it's all the more important with some of the rhetoric and some of the what we see nationally, that we show our support for the community. And as this was a Heritage Month previously recognized by the U.S. State Department, I think it's appropriate for Warwick to recognize it as well and to support those members of the community here in Warwick. Further discussion, members of the committee, members of the council, members of the public? Hearing none, all in favor? Or, pardon me, do we have a motion? Thank you. Motion, favorable action, Councilman Foley, seconded by Councilman DeLuise. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. And last on this committee agenda is PCR 63-25, a resolution in an observance of Immigrant Heritage Month. This was also, June also recognized as Immigrant Heritage Month by the U.S. State Department. I think this is important for all of the same reasons, as well as this is a country of immigrants. Unless you are a Native American, all of us or all of our ancestors came here to America. Any questions, comments, members of the committee? Questions, comments, discussions, members of the council? Members of the public, questions, comments, discussion? Hearing none, do we have a motion?
Favorable action.
And do we? Thank you. And all in favor?
Aye.
4-0. The committee adjourns at 8:10 p.m.